Support for Commodity Week comes from the Friends of WILL and from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign. With crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the May 11 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Bill Gentry. He is with Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana. Joe Vaklovic is here as well from Standard Grain out of Gallatin, Tennessee. And Dale Durkles joins us. He's in Bloomington, Illinois at AgriVisor. Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org. I don't think we have to get a list of anything to talk about because there's been so much happening, Dale Durkles, over the last 24 hours. Of course, USDA came out with its set of numbers for the World Agricultural Outlook. WASDE figures this morning used a trend line yield for corn at 176, and we have so much happening in Washington, D.C. related to the breakdown in trade negotiations between China and the United States. And then, of course, there's the weather. What's the most important of those three or some other item you've been watching?
Well, I think, you know, as we sit here and getting ready to wrap up the week on a Friday and considering the grain markets themselves really absorbed the USDA numbers relatively well, I think China's there. But I think going forward and looking forward, especially after weather forecasts out this afternoon, we really got to start watching this weather and how planting progress moves forward.
Joe Vaklovic, from your perspective, what was the thing over this last 12 hours that was most important?
Well, the trade talks collapsing is a huge deal, not just in terms of fundamentals, but that these big funds who are record short the grain complex are short partially just because of this trade war. I think that a short grain position is a hedge against a trade war, and I think that they're going to ride this thing until either the weather forces them out or until the trade war is resolved. So I think that is a big issue. I mean, the USDA told us, in my opinion, the big thing here is that demand is very soft. You know, I have no opinion on the yield right now. I mean, maybe it should be lower. It doesn't matter. It's May 10th. But the demand numbers across the board for all these crops have really deteriorated, and that's very frustrating.
And Bill Gentry, your perspective.
You know, I think most of the bases have been covered in the last 45 minutes or an hour on your show. One that I think is probably emerging and started to emerge last Friday was the prevent plant possibilities. I think with corn being what it is, we're not going to probably be able to turn a wheel until mid-late next week. And then one, we might have an open week, and then we're going to be to the end of the month. The incentive to the producer right now is to go ahead and try to plant corn. But if he can't and gets to the prevent plant date, he may just take that. And then the question comes forward is there incentive for him to switch any of those acres to beans? And quite frankly, almost to a man that I've talked to, it's no. So they're just thinking about taking the money and walking away. The other thing to consider is, when do you get the money? Because if you try and plant the crop, you're not going to get it until the crop is harvested and sold. If you take prevent plant, you're probably going to get money at the end of July or somewhere in that neighborhood. And the time value of your money basically then really starts to kick in. So I think prevent plant is really being penciled through from a lot of guys.
This will be primarily in Illinois and Indiana, though I think there will be some places along the river system across the Mississippi Valley that might be in the throes of those considerations. I think I'll come back to the weather with you, Dale.
You know, I mean, here we sat, you and I both in central Illinois, and we were supposed to have weather even out here today and have a nice weekend, and the first half of next week was going to be nice. And, you know, then the short range forecast shifted on us. We're going to have shower chances both tomorrow and Sunday. Who knows how widespread? Doesn't really matter how much, because we're laden with soil moisture everywhere that you go if you go look at the soil moisture maps. But then when you get to the middle part of next week or toward the latter part of next week, you really start to run into moisture chances again. And the new 6 to 10, 8 to 14 day forecast showed that moisture that had been out in the southwest starting to move up north and west and coming into the western part of the Corn Belt and eventually on east itself. So we'll have to see. I'd like to see what other people think the planting numbers come Monday are going to be, because right now I'm thinking corn planting 41 to 45%, bean planting 25% or less. And that mirrors where we were back in 1993.
Anybody else have a guess on that, Joe or Bill?
I really don't, but I don't think we've made much progress, so I would say we might even be shy of that.
That I'm being generous.
Yeah, so I happen to have those numbers in front of me. So 1993 was 40%, and the following week was 71. And 2009, which is... and Seth Meyer talked about 2008, but I think he meant 9 when he was talking to me this afternoon, was 48% on this coming Monday, and 62% the following week. It's important to note that in both of those years, 93 and 2009, the week after that, so we were at 87 in week 21 and 86%, or, I'm sorry, and 82%. So there's just a big jump from week 19 to week 21. So this 3 week period right now, this is the time frame where things are really going to change at this point in time, I suppose. And a lot depends on the weather, Joe Baklevic, at this point. And potentially where all those acres, if they do go to prevent plant, are laid out, or just maybe how many of them are laid out in total. Do you have any thoughts?
Well, at the end of the day, for me, it comes down to the balance sheets and ending stocks and stocks to use ratios. And for right now, I mean, USDA gave us a new crop carryout number at, almost 2.5 billion bushels. I mean, our goal at this point is just to see, can you even knock that thing back down to 2 billion? And to do that, you're going to have to take some harvested acres off. You're going to have to take some yield off. And if that happens, you probably increase or you probably see some demand changes also. So, I mean, it matters, but it's not the only thing that matters. I mean, we still got demand issues here that I can't ignore. I'd like to, discuss production and say that that's the only thing that matters, but we've got a lot of other issues here.
Yeah, and what's China going to do for retaliatory prospects as it relates to the trade issues and tariffs that were put on last night?
Well, I think that, as far as China goes, a 25% tariff is probably the same as a 50% tariff. It's going to keep them out of the market unless they want to buy them for state reserves and not pay the tariff. I mean, it's probably going to be things more along the lines of currency manipulation and things like that. I don't really know what else they can do on a tariff side that's going to hurt us a whole lot.
Think they'll cancel anything, anybody?
Oh, that, I think you always have to worry about that as a possibility. You know, we've got like 270 million bushel of beans on the books right now. There's like, I think, 60,000 tons of pork on the books that you also have to worry about along the way in here. But I don't think the cancellations would necessarily be their initial response. I think it'll come under some other issues with industrial goods, et cetera, where they may try to look, and move away from targeting purely ag, which they've had a heavy bias towards, to trying to look at some other areas of the economy. They could start to have some impact too. I'd like to ask Joe, if he thought the USDA demand numbers, and I'm not speaking of the U.S. demand numbers, but the world demand numbers they put out there, were generous today.
I think they were. I think the soybean number especially, I mean, you could make an argument that China soybean import number, if this African swine fever is as real as people say it is, that number could be a whole lot lower. And that is particularly troubling for me, yeah.
Now, the one thing I have, some people we deal with that have good China ties are basically only talking about meal demand this year in China being 2% off what it was a year ago, before all this started. And when you look at the spot meal market over there, it just seems like there's a consistency of pretty good buying going on in the spot meal market in China, which argues that, whatever we're not sure about in terms of hog numbers, we're sure not seeing that reflected back through into the to the base feedstock to feed livestock. In other words, looking at the feed numbers themselves. So it's a confusing situation, and none of us know for sure, you know, and it's one that we just continue to peel back the layers as we learn a little more.
Hey, Bill Gentry, I want to come back to you and let you finish some of this prevent plant discussion that we started earlier. The chart I have in front of me, thank you to Ellen Dearden for forwarding that along just as we were going through the closing market report on Friday afternoon. Interestingly enough, the 1993 number for planting as of this past Monday was 40%, right? In 2009, which we believe is the number that Seth Meyer has been trying to get to us, is 48%, and this year was only 23% along, of course. So we've got a lot to do between next Monday and the following Monday to get anywhere close to that 87, 85, 82% that USDA seems to think we'd have to get to. And the only year that's off by very much there is the low one is actually 1995 at 71%. So there's just an awful lot to happen.
Exactly. And in that direction, I kind of pre-thought that this afternoon, and in our office, we had a discussion about what are the chances if we get, let's say, a 5-day open spot, let's say late next week, of guys running around the clock. And the answer came back, logistically, it's not as easy as it used to be, because you've got to have seed tenders, you got to have, you know, other kind of drivers, and the conditions yet are not evenly fit. So you could be working around in the middle of the night and hit a slick spot in your SOL for an extended period of time, and working in the dark in that situation is really a difficult spot to be in. So I think a lot of producers are going to opt away from that particular strategy and cross their fingers for better weather. And if that doesn't work, then the prevent plant just creeps back into the mix again.
So what are producers to do at this point? Do they actually consider prevent plant and prepare themselves to pull that off?
You need to crunch the numbers. And I think some of the stats that I saw today was, if you've not put any chemical or any fertilizer on the ground and you're going to get the prevent plant price, it's almost a no-brainer at these price levels. Now, I think what the market needs to do, and what was pointed out to us, is that the market needs to rally enough to make the farmer think again about prevent plant. And that's really the catalyst that could develop, that could force the funds to cover some short positions. So cautiously optimistic in that week to 10 days that we're waiting for this open window to develop. That's what the market very well could do. And the short-lived rallies that we've seen could emerge one more time. So cautiously optimistic that that'll happen. But so far, it's been slow to develop.
Dale, what's your plan of attack from this point forward?
I don't know that you can really have a plan of attack going forward at this point, because you just have to play the game as you see the conditions unfold at this juncture. You know, the one thing, and I put these out in Farm Week a week ago, and so anybody can go out to farmweeknow.com and see the graphics. I put up the 93 November bean, the 93 December corn, then I put a planting graphic that had current 5-year average and 1993 planting pace on it. So they can kind of get a feel for where we're at. We've got to remember, you know, in this prevent plant discussion, which we didn't have in 1993, we did not plant almost 3 million acres of land. That was based on a USDA survey. You know, and now we've got prevent plant as an alternative, which we didn't have there. So I think what Bill's talking about really is correct there, and that's really looming more and more on the horizon at this juncture. And how the mix turns out, who knows? You know, but the last couple of years where we've been under 2 million acres is really unusually small, so we could easily shift back that way. But I think right now, when you look at the overall perspective, you got funds heavily short corn, you've got them record short beans, you got them relatively heavily short on the wheat, and yet everybody seems to be comfortable. We'll grow a big crop, and they're ignoring what's going on out their window, and I think that's a dangerous thing. You know, the China thing is part of the mix in here, I will admit that, but I think at some point here, the planting thing, if it continues, takes precedent. Now, back in 1993, we got into the middle of June, and corn went from 2.25 to 2.60 in about 7 to 10 days. Beans, we had a $2 rally in 7 to 10 days because everybody was leaning that hard and all of a sudden just got slapped upside the face and said, we can't stand this anymore. And with the funds being positioned that way this year, I think, you know, you got to be careful and not getting too pessimistic here, especially at these price levels, because we could have a furious little rally. Yeah, getting beans over 9 is going to be hard on the board. Yeah, getting corn up beyond 380, I'm looking at July on the board, will be hard. Or we could talk about $4 on D's. I don't know that I'd bet on more than that, but I don't think you sell anything down in here. And in fact, I would look at another alternative down in here. People need to, with old crop stuff, need to be start shopping around and seeing, can I get a good basis out here and start tying that up? Because these old crop carryouts are going to work against you. And right now with low prices, basis levels should be at about their best. And we're starting to see the river starting to get ready to clear up a little bit.
Joe Vaclavic, your plan of attack?
Well, I was doing some math here while we were on the phone. And, you know, if we are to lose, say we lose 3 million acres off the harvested acres number, just for argument's sake here, if you lose that 3 million, you take your harvested acres and corn down to 82.4 and you keep your yield at 176, all else unchanged, you're still at a 2 billion bushel carryout. Now, the fun gets a little more interesting if you start to walk the yield number down. You know, if you take like 10 bushels off the yield, which some people think is possible, I saw some of the academics talking that way today, you could easily, you know, knock that carryout closer to 1.1 or 1.2, which puts you in a much, much different market if you were to leave the demand unchanged. So there is upside risk here. There's no doubt about it. But could we still do a 176? I don't know that I'd argue that we can't at this point.
So all fairness to you, back in 1973, the USDA, I think they were like 122. They left it alone in June, stayed at 122. In July, they went to 118. And the bitter end, we were down closer to 100 or like 101. But we aren't going to see the USDA mark this thing down until we get into July sometime anyway.
Bill Gentry, how about you? What's the plan of attack from risk management?
Yeah, with that resonated when what the last statement was adjusting the yield. And what about our crop ratings? I mean, are they going to use the crop ratings as a guiding light for the yield adjustments, or is there going to be something else involved? And as far as we're concerned, I agree. I think there's some upside potential. We haven't been making any new sales to speak of. Old crop, we continue to push it out the door, but we're also encouraging some reownership of some consequence. I think we put out that in our update today that flat out, buying some calls here in this relatively inexpensive environment and low volatility looks to be an odds-on favorite. So I think that's the strategy of choice, would be move old crop inventory as best I can, hold off on new, and buy some calls wherever you feel comfortable.
Well, what do you think producers in the field really are considering at this point? Because they appear to be running out of options, especially for old crop. And in both the corn and the soybeans, particularly corn, because there's so much of it left around. And you've given some ideas about basis, but can they really find a place where they'll be able to eliminate those inventories prior to the time that they're going to have to make a decision of whether to dump or not? And I don't know, maybe you can pick that back up for me, Dale.
Well, one thing you can do, especially if we start to see, you know, basis in a generic sense has a reverse function to futures prices. You know, and we've got to deal with that. We know we've got a carryout that's going to be plus 2 billion bushel old crop I'm speaking of. You know, and you know as you push further into the summer, that's going to work against you at this point, unless there's something going on with new crop that would be desperate, like a billion bushel carry out on new crop, and then that changes the dynamics altogether. But when you look at it this way, if we've got people on the river and the processor side, you know, start to go, you know, I'm not getting much bought, and they aren't. Farmers have been pretty darn stubborn, especially as prices gotten weaker and weaker. If I can get stuff rolled into a basis contract in the short term, if I'm getting a good basis, go ahead, the old stuff, get it physically somehow tied to a market. And then if you do get a pop in this thing, and I think we will, let's say we go July futures into 370, 380, you just start pricing the stuff and walk away. You know, and we'll have places for it. Yeah, 2 billion bushel carry out, you know, it's not unusual, not unheard of. And you know, new crop as it is, you know, the USDA was a little over $15 billion today. And I think it's going to be hard to go above that because I think what we've done here at this point so far this spring, we've taken the top end off of this thing. The other thing we got to remember right now is that last year when we hit the 1st of May, it got warm and corn grew like wildfire. I mean, really grew hard, grew fast. And so we got a lot of development in that May, June time slot. Don't think that's going to happen this year the way it's shaping up. So we keep pushing development out into critical periods when we get into late summer, and then we don't even know what the fall is going to be like. So do we truncate the back end of the growing season too? I mean, who knows out in there? There's so many unknowns. But the old crop, I think getting the basis somewhere in the next couple of weeks, if I get a good opportunity, get it tied up and be done with it, and then try to figure out how to price the board.
Well, you mentioned the 2-2-1, 2-2 is not an unusual carryout, but when you look into the next year, it's almost a 2.5 billion bushel carryout. That's just a big whale of a number, Dale.
It is and it isn't, you know, Todd. I mean, you know, we've got the capacity unless demand is just really shitty. You know, and yeah, you have some problems when you get out into the fall with trying to figure out where do you put away a new crop if it ends up being a really good new crop, as well as, you know, still carrying some old crop inventory. And then on top of that, having an extra 400 million, whatever, 500 million of beans to deal with, too. That's why I say, to me, there's a basis risk as you get into late summer and maybe even off into the fall itself.
We've got this really big carryout, Joe, that we just discussed. The old crop for corn, kind of large. The new crop, really, really a big number. Are those numbers sustainable for the United States?
The old crop number is, I mean, probably not going to move too far from what USDA printed today. I mean, you've got monster South American crops coming. They've still got a currency advantage in South America. Our demand here domestically has not been phenomenal. I mean, ethanol margins are still not that great, although production's bumped up a little bit. You could see some bump out of the feed usage number, I guess. But, I mean, I think we're pretty much stuck with something around $2 billion, give or take. Now, the new crop number is a much different deal. I mean, this is just a fantasy world that we're living in, looking at a 2.5 billion bushel carryout. There's so many variables. I mean, you're talking about a time frame between now and August of 2020 that we're trying to predict, and what's going to happen in that time frame. Everything from U.S. production this growing season to demand to currency fluctuations to trade issues, you name it, they're all up in the air at this point. And I think USDA painted a pretty ugly picture for new crop, and I think that it has the potential to get quite a bit less ugly, if you want to put it that way.
So set by the sidelines and wait it out for the moment.
In terms of marketing, yeah, but you've got to keep in mind that I think the one advantage that we have in regard to new crop marketing is that there's a ton of carry in these corn and soybean markets, and that's the one advantage. So that just means that the deferred prices are a lot better than the nearby prices. So if you do get your rally, if you do get your short covering event for whatever reason, maybe it happens next week, maybe it happens 4 months from now, that's where you have to look. That's where you're going to be paid the best, and those with bins especially can benefit.
What do we all think about the prevent plant discussion that's been taking place? I mean, farmers clearly have started to think about this, and it's not – what's odd is, while Gary Schnitke and I had that conversation, it seems like that farmers just came up with this on their own, that they're really considering this and looking, I think, at just an awful forecast and wondering what they're going to do and if prevent plant works. I don't know, Dale, have you been hearing this from farmers as well?
You get it bits and pieces. I don't think at this point yet, where it's still the 10th day of May, you know, where people are really necessarily saying, okay, I'm really considering that as a viable possibility. I think they're pushing the pencil at this point, trying to understand, is this a workable alternative for me at this juncture? You know, and what are all the details that work into that? As Bill said, you know, hey, you can get a paycheck up front, but then you get into the whole thing of, you know, well, how does that deal with, depending on how my accounting's structured on my farm, am I calendar year basis, or am I on accrual basis, and where does that fit in, you know, as far as income is concerned? Because if you do prevent plant on acres, you got to remember you don't have bushels to sell next year either. So it's not an easy decision is what I'm saying. But I think people decided it's time to push a pencil. It's time to figure out, is it an alternative if push comes to shove? And, you know, even though we end up here at the end of May when we hit that quote unquote prevent plant date, we got to remember, you know, I only lose 1% per day of my insurance guarantee after that day. So, you know, if I'm still at the 1st of June and let's say I've lost 5%, I may still be better off if I can get in the field and go plant the crop than taking a prevent plant. So, I mean, I just think people are taking a preemptive action of deciding if things get really ugly, what do I do? And we will see some fields go that way because of water issues in some areas are really bad. And you know, as much as you like the Western Corn Belt, I talked to a guy that's in northwestern Iowa. You know, he still has 600 acres of ammonia he hadn't put on.
I think that's a key point. As far as if you don't have any of your fertilizer on or you haven't done any appreciable field work at this particular date and time, you're going to have to do some catch up. And that's going to be a real challenge, and then go and get it planted. So that's probably one of the biggest talking points we've had is if you haven't done anything to date, you've got catch up to do plus get the actual job done. And that's going to be really tough.
And the Trump administration came back in today and complicated the mess one more time, relatively speaking, because if it's an MFP payment, it will be on bushels sold.
Right. I mean, there's a lot of weird things here. You know, as far as planting is concerned, and I talked to a couple of people. This was a month ago, and they were already back home, Todd. And they were already getting concerned about, you know, the moisture in the ground and the way the weather was looking and the way things were shaping up. And I said, you know, what you need to start doing at this point is start looking at potential alternatives. Because the big fertilizer that a lot of people don't have on is nitrogen. You know, and my brother, when he was alive, he always did side dress after he planted the crop. He had a trucking business, too, and he was always busy in spring and in fall. So, you know, he used 28% to put down his chemical, et cetera, and went back and side dressed after that. You know, and that's an alternative there as well. And I said, the one thing you want to do with the crop is try to preserve your plant date. I mean, if you can come back in and do some things as far as ammonia is concerned or urea, whatever, afterwards, side dressing, and yeah, you have some compaction, but you're going to have compaction if you go in ahead of time. So I think it's farmers out there you're going to find are going to be somewhat flexible on how things get done this year.
Yeah, Emerson Nafziger and I had that discussion, last week or a week and a half ago, and he's of a mind that he'd prefer to have the anhydrous on and just to offset it with RTK or GPS by 8 inches and just come right back in and not have to worry about the 10-day delay. Just come back in and do it and try to shorten that up so that, yes, the plant date, it's all about planting date.
It really is, you know. And my brother, even though he side dressed, he never suffered yield-wise with it either compared to anybody else around him.
Is it bad, Dale, that when you said come back home, I thought, you mean from Florida? And then it dawned on me that we're both from Logan County.
Yeah.
It was that kind of corn, yeah. Soybean, Florida rotation, right? All right. Let's get a final word, I think, from each of you. Joe Vaclavec, I'll start with you from Standard Grain.
I'm still generally concerned regarding demand. Just the lack of export activity is frustrating, especially considering how cheap prices are. I fear that South American competition is going to be very stiff for a long, long time and that our demand woes may continue. On the bright side, if you're to paint a positive picture for the markets, funds are record short. If they get scared just for a minute, that we're going to be light in terms of yield or acres or both, or simply that production is at risk, I think you will get a short covering rally. And that sometime this summer, whether it be May, June, July, that may be your marketing opportunity for the year.
Hey, if they get scared, does that matter whether they get scared by weather or if it's a flight of risk out of other havens? So if they get scared that the trade deal really is going to fall through and they look for something other than paper?
Yeah, no, I think that could do it. I think a trade resolution could do it. Maybe not to the extent necessarily that a weather issue could do it. But yeah, I think that's one of several triggers that could push the funds away from these positions. But you got to keep in mind, I talked about the carry. The carry is the fund's friend here. They get to stay short and then roll it to a deferred month at a higher price and short it at that price. It's worked out pretty well.
Bill Gentry of Risk Management Commodities, your final word?
I think we didn't touch on the stocks to use ratios. I think they were exceptionally high. Probably have to go back as much as 10 years to match these kind of levels. I think realistically, I'd like to think that we've got a high watermark in place. So if that's the case, then things start to look a little bit more price positive going forward. It just may take a while to unfold.
And Dale Durkles of AgriVisor.
You know, one thing we haven't talked about here, and everybody is so concerned about the farmer and where the farmer is, but if you're an end user out there, you've got a bargain to play with here. If you're feeding livestock, there's really good money in just walking out there and locking up your feed inputs and walking away. You know, and I know ethanol margins aren't great at this point in time, but, you know, as you look at it, you go, are they going to likely, you know, a corn price is going to likely get a whole lot worse than where we are today. I look at feed or food inputs. You know, if I'm looking at the wheat side of the mix right now and I'm a baker of bread, what are the odds my flour mixes get a whole lot cheaper? I think we need to finally start looking at the end users' response here at this point too, because he has been given something that he probably didn't expect to see at this time of year. Lastly, we've had a contra-seasonal decline in the spring in grain prices, corn and beans in particular. Those tend to follow with some kind of a contra-seasonal response as well. So we got to be very wary. If this thing turns, the pop can be a little bit better than what people think. Not going to be great, but I think now's not the time to despair.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may listen to the whole of our program anytime you'd like on our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. Our thanks go to our panelists this week, including Dale Durkles of AgriVisor out of Bloomington, Illinois, Joe Vaklovic from Standard Grain in Gallatin, Tennessee, and Bill Gentry of Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason.